The headlines this hour. Ayatollah Khamenei approves amnesty and commutation of sentences for a large number of people detained during the recent riots in Iran. Iran's atomic organization unveils a number of technological achievements, making Iran a producer of vital medical products in the world. And Russian forces are encircling the Ukrainian city of Bakhmut, while President Zelensky vows not to give up. Thanks for joining us. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has pardoned and commuted the sentences of a large number of people arrested during the recent riots in the country. Ayatollah Khamenei issued the decree in response to a request by the Iranian judiciary on the occasion of the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. In his request, Ghulam Hussein Mohseni Ejei said many of those who committed crimes during the foreign-backed riots are now repentant and ask for forgiveness. Cases against those charged with crimes or convicted of them will now be dropped. The judiciary chief, however, said the clemency will not apply to those who committed espionage, murder, bodily harm, and vandalism. Those facing lawsuits by private litigations are not eligible for the amnesty either. Ayatollah Khamenei has also granted amnesty to a number of people convicted of other crimes. First, Al Najim, a human rights activist, joins us. Feras, welcome. Taking a look at this move by Iran's leader, obviously in line with the 44th anniversary of Iran's Islamic Revolution, and what better way to give a gift to the ones who were either caught up in these rioting that took place. But it's a very smart move at the same time. But it also shows compassion that Iran's leader does have. I'm wondering how this is being covered. First of all, your reaction, I'm wondering how this is being covered by other media outlets.
Yes, unfortunately, the mainstream media does not cover these type of moves, humanitarian moves by the Islamic Republic of Iran. As well, we've seen a beautiful scenario where the Supreme Leader, Sayyid Khamenei, was with a lot of young girls, hundreds of them or thousands of them, and they were doing commemoration for something and celebrating something important. And we didn't see that also covered on mainstream media, how beautiful the gathering was and how the children were so excited and happy to be with Sayyid Khamenei. Unfortunately, a lot of these important things that happened that are positive, the mainstream media just shadow bans them and just kind of buries them, away from the public and from everywhere in the world, because they have an agenda. Unfortunately, this is what it is. And at that point, they will lie and they will manipulate and they will fabricate and they will distort the real image of what the Islamic Republic of Iran and its merciful system is. I never hear in Canada them having any pardons on a mass amount of people at Christmas or any different type of time, even holy times, right? There is certain cases where they probably pardon certain things maybe, or they're more lenient on a certain sentence or so on, but that's just, case by case. But this is on a high level, on a big level, and this is not the first time. I mean, this Islamic Republic of Iran has done that on several occasions, especially holy times or Nowruz or things like that. And I think this really shows and the just system that the of Iran does really have. All these things into consideration. I mean, the people that were writing, some of them maybe were upset because of the high inflations, the sanctions, and so on, and their emotions got played together. And they went out there and they made some mistakes, and they joined these rallies and committed some crimes. And now look, they're looking into that and saying that some of them have repented, some of them have said that they made mistakes. So now they're letting them go or they're lessening their sentences. But at the same time, they are holding the ones accountable that were spying for foreign countries. the ones that were stabbing police officers, the ones that were killing. You know, and you were talking to me right now and asked me a question about what, how's the media taking this news. You know, when the three people were executed, the three Iranians that killed police officers, and there was straight, clear proof, the media said three rioters or three protesters were executed. That's all we've seen in the media. They didn't say that these people were killing officers, were stabbing officers, were stabbing Iranian citizens, and also authorities. They didn't say that. So it was very manipulated, and then it showed as if like Iran is suppressing these people and that they didn't deserve this sentence, and that you know, these people are innocent. This is what the media plays. The media lies a lot, and it creates the wrong image, and makes the guilty look innocent, and makes the innocent look guilty at times. And we need to pay attention to all this. The people in the world need to pay attention to the mainstream media, and also to dig in, I guess, into the Islamic Republic of Iran's media and the affiliates, to see what the real picture is, to see what the developments are really are. You know, and this takes work, this takes efforts, and unfortunately, the West is their systems in general, and their media are full of hypocrisy, full of hypocrisy. And me living here in Canada, I mean, a lot of times I see these media outlets, and I ask them, why didn't you cover this story the other day? Why didn't you say something like this? Why did you only cover this part of it? And, you know, they get all nervous when you see these media people somewhere at times and ask them. They say, oh, well, you know what? I report based on what my office tells me to report. But I said, well, where's the transparency? Where's the justice? Where's the equality? Where's the truth? Aren't you doing this for the truth? Or are you just doing this as a paid agent? This is, unfortunately, this is what's happening with media.
All right. Thank you very much for that. First on the Jim, human rights activist there. Thank you. Iran's foreign minister says U.S. bullying and sanctions policy are doomed to failure. Hossein Amir Abdollahian made the remark in a meeting with his Cuban counterpart in Havana. The top Iranian diplomat reaffirmed Tehran's condemnation of foreign meddling in Cuba's affairs and the U.S. role in the 2021 riots in the Caribbean country. Also referring to the recent unrest in Iran, Amir Abdollahian said the U.S. and some other Western states target sovereign countries by simultaneously imposing sanctions on them and provoking riots there. The Cuban foreign minister, for his part, also denounced unilateral sanctions and foreign interference. Bruno Rodriguez said enhancing ties with Iran is a priority for his country. Amir Abdollahian also earlier met with the Cuban president. He's on a foreign tour, which has already taken him to Mauritania, Nicaragua, and Venezuela. Iran's deputy foreign minister says the country is playing an increasingly important role in international arena, as evidenced by its accession to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization.
Iran joined Shanghai, which was Iran's demand. It was Iran's demand for many years. But the important point is, why was it admitted at this time? Our entry at this point showed the need for multilateralism, and this shows the position, role, and importance of Iran in global relations and also in the New World Order. The same is true about BRICS Plus. It is interesting to note that when the Islamic Republic of Iran proposed to join the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, it took more than 15 years for the Islamic Republic of Iran to join the organization until it was approved. But when the Islamic Republic of Iran proposed to enter the BRICS Plus process until Mr. Raisi, the Honorable President of the Islamic Republic of Iran, at the BRICS Plus meeting held in China, gave a speech as a country that wants to enter this group, it didn't take more than 4 or 5 months.
In an interview with Press TV's Insight program, Bagheri Kenny also said the world is witnessing the gradual rise of a new world order and that Iran can play an effective role in shaping it. The Iranian diplomat said the decline of Western powers is quite tangible now, and it will become more and more evident as time goes by. Bagheri Kenny said the world's emerging powers are setting up their own multilateral mechanisms, notably the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and BRICS. The ninth meeting of the Joint Economic Cooperation Committee of Iran and Zimbabwe wrapped up its work in Tehran. The meeting has provided a platform for developing economic cooperation and improving the level of trade exchanges between the two countries, which have been under sanctions for years. Saman Kujuri reports.
The closing session of the ninth meeting of the Joint Economic Cooperation Committee of Iran and Zimbabwe was held in Tehran. During the meeting, the two sides stressed the importance of bilateral cooperation in the fields of agriculture, health, and facilitating exports of Iranian drugs into the Zimbabwean market. Iran and Zimbabwe officials agreed to use Iran's experiences in various fields, including the development of small and medium-sized enterprises, energy, and science. Agriculture, exports of machinery, sale of petrochemical products, and technical engineering services are among the existing capacities for broader cooperation between Iran and Zimbabwe. Speaking at the meeting, Iran's Minister of Cooperatives, Labor and Social Welfare, Solat Mortazavi, said that the current level of commercial and economic relations between the two sides should increase to at least $500 million per year, based on high potentials of the two countries.
The current level of commercial and economic relations between the two countries is not satisfactory, and the two countries should use their capacities to increase their volume of bilateral trade to at least $500 million per year. Zimbabwe has been under sanctions for almost 20 years, and Iran can share its experiences with Zimbabwe in various fields, including neutralizing the existing sanctions of the West.
Addressing the meeting, the visiting Zimbabwe's Minister of Foreign Affairs and International Trade, Makamura Shava, said mutual ties with Iran is taken to be very significant for Zimbabwe, stressing the country will definitely enjoy bilateral friendly ties with the Islamic Republic.
Zimbabwe and Iran are like twins who must learn to cooperate, because both countries have been slammed with sanctions by the West. And in this regard, the West hoped that Iran would go to its knees, Zimbabwe would go to its knees, but thank God this has not happened. So we are here to make sure that we turn the fortunes round and to say that these sanctions which the West imposed on us can be a blessing in disguise.
At the end of the meeting, several memoranda of understanding were signed by the two sides. According to Iranian officials, sanctions have become an opportunity to enhance production and improve human resources productivity, and that Iran is ready to transfer know-how and develop Zimbabwe's energy, transportation, tourism, medicine, and mining sectors. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
Iran's Vice President and Head of the Atomic Energy Organization, Mohammad Islami, has unveiled three major achievements of his organization. Islami officially started the production line of sanitary superabsorbent blood clotting powder and the essence microwave extractor in the central province of Yazd. Iran is now among the world's producers of strategic medical goods that are vital in surgical operations. The highly consumed products used to be imported from China, Taiwan, and South Korea. On the 44th anniversary of the Islamic Revolution's victory, Iran is unveiling tens of strategic, high-tech products in different sectors with civilian and non-civilian uses, all produced by domestic startups. Israel has arrested many Palestinians in raids across the occupied West Bank. One of the detainees is senior Islamic Jihad leader Sheikh Khazar Adnan. He was arrested during an incursion into a village south of Jenin. Our correspondent Ramallah Mona Kandil joined us earlier with more details.
Khadr Adnan had been arrested by the Israeli forces several times in the past, and he is known to be the leader of the Battle of the Empty Stomachs. We have to mention that his wife revealed that immediately after the ugly way of detaining Sheikh Khadr Adnan, he declared that he would start an open-ended hunger strike because he considers his detention is illegal as usual in the past. We are speaking about 10 other Palestinians had been detained by the Israeli forces. In Jenin, four Palestinians were detained. Clashes erupted between the Palestinians and the Israeli soldiers. In Ariha, one Palestinian was arrested. In Ramallah, two Palestinians were detained by the Israeli forces. In Beit Fajar, in Beit Lahem, one Palestinian was detained. And also in towns around Al-Quds, 3 other Palestinians were detained by the Israeli soldiers.
Heavy fighting raging in the northern parts of the Ukrainian city of Bakhmut, which has been the target of a Russian campaign for weeks. The head of Russia's private military company, the Wagner Group, says that his soldiers are fighting for every street and house against the Ukrainian forces who refuse to retreat. Russian forces appear to be making progress in their campaign to encircle and capture Bakhmut in the eastern Donbas region. The Wagner Group has been leading Russian efforts in the area. Capturing Bakhmut would be Russia's most important strategic advance since last summer. The Ukrainian president says the situation around the city is getting tougher as Russia mobilizes more forces. And that is for World News. Bye-bye for now.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The Qasr Prison.
Part 1.
1979, Tehran. The country is on the edge of a precipice. Street clashes are raging between the army and the people. Endless strikes are crippling the country. Prime ministers are being ousted one after another, and foreign nationals leaving the country. The Shah is helpless. The Shah is hopeless. Nothing can assuage the anger of the nation. A revolution is in sight. October the 24th, 1978. Tehran, the Gas Prison. A few months before the Islamic Revolution of Iran, a great number of political prisoners are released after years of being in prison and under torture. Since the beginning of the Pahlavi dynasty, the Qas prison had been the graveyard of many political opponents. But within a few months, it would fall into the hands of revolutionaries and a new chapter in the history of this edifice would begin. The name of this prison still conjures up images of many contemporary Iranian figures that fought heart and soul against the Pahlavi regime. The Qasr prison. Over the last two centuries, this building has undergone many fundamental changes, each one mirroring part of this land's history. Tehran, the Qasr Garden Museum. In 2001, the Qasr prison was closed down after 76 years. In a 10-year project, the municipality of Tehran converted it into the Qasr Garden Museum. The museum has three main parts: the Markov prison, the political prison, and a large garden the prisons are located in. In the Garden Museum, exhibition stands have been set up, each one representing a critical moment in the history of Iran. A number of political prisoners during the Pahlavi era are here to recount their first-hand experiences for visitors. The building is located in the center of Tehran, but around 200 years ago, during the Qajar dynasty, it was miles away from the city, in a district known as Khurram Abad Hills. In 1798, Fath Ali Shah, the second king of the Qajar dynasty, ordered a recreational palace to be built outside Tehran, a great palace that cost the court dearly.
Tehran, which we are today with this great and glory, During the early years of the Qajar dynasty, Tehran, which was the capital city of the country, was about 6 kilometers away from where the Qasr Garden Museum is now located in. In that era, this place was a green region with nice weather, to an extent that at the time it was known as Khorramabad, or a verdant place.
Iranian palaces share a similar structure. A large garden with small brooks running through, a stately summer house in the middle, and a luxurious mansion at the end with numerous rooms for the Shah and his wives. It is said the palace cost the Shah 400,000 tomans, a huge sum of money in those days. Many foreigners visited the palace, among them Samuel G.W. Benjamin, the U.S. ambassador to Tehran, Pierre Amédée Joubert, Napoleon Bonaparte's envoy to the court of Fateh Ali Shah, and Madame Carla Serena. Visiting the palace, Madame Serena was impressed by the paintings she saw there. Writing in her travel log, "The palace has been heavenly decorated, and the paintings done in the most delicate fashion." In 1806, His Majesty spent 3 months of March, April, and May at this palace. But the glory days didn't last long. During the reign of Nasser al-Din Shah, the palace fell from grace and, abandoned, a devastating flood razed it to the ground. After that, its precincts were used as military camps and makeshift war prisons. But the future had something else in store. When Reza Shah came to the throne, the country's penal system needed a complete overhaul. The number of prisoners was growing and the old prisons no longer met international standards. The government had to establish modern prisons and recognize civil rights for its convicts.
During the Qajar dynasty, prison was not basically like the one in the Pahlavi era. It was a small building made up of 3 rooms and some rooms in the basement. This was the police's detention center during the Qajar dynasty. But with the growing confrontation between the Iranian nation and the Pahlavi regime, the number of prisoners increased and the regime was prompted to establish a big prison.
The Qajari prisons were old and small, more like dungeons than modern prisons, and couldn't accommodate the increasing number of prisoners. Brigadier Mohammad Dargahi, the Tehran chief of police, requested a new and larger prison. In 1927, Reza Shah commissioned Nikolai Markov, an Iranian architect of Georgian descent, to build the prison. Working for the municipality of Tehran, he had designed many buildings, including Tehran's post office and telecommunications and Alborz High School. Markov decided to build the prison in the south part of the dilapidated palace. The prison took 2 years to complete. In December 1929, it was opened with 192 rooms, designed to house 800 prisoners. In the opening ceremony, Brigadier Dargahi was showing the new prison to Reza Shah and other high-ranking officials. When the group reached the iron cell, the brigadier opened the door for the Shah and asked him and his entourage to step in. But the Shah refused to enter when he was warned by his court minister of a possible coup d'etat. 2 days later, Brigadier Dargahi was relieved of his command and became the first prisoner of this macabre prison. Under Reza Shah, the Qasr prison was the only prison in Tehran. In those days, prisoners were kept together without any classification. Many scholars, writers and poets spent years of their lives within its walls. Muhammad Farrokhi Yazdi, a well-known poet, was one of them. His revolutionary poems were so critical of the regime that he was imprisoned and his lips sewn together with needle and thread. It is widely believed he was put to death at the prison by venous air injection. In the past, there were two underground canals that supplied drinking and irrigation water to the palace. Years later, when the palace was converted into the prison, the two canals had gushed out to the surface, and prisoners would quench their thirst from the freezing water. Hence the Persian idiom, to drink cool water, was coined, an idiom with a pleasant literal meaning, but an unpleasant reference. Shot in 1958, the footage shows prisoners busy with various activities. The edifice has seen many hard days when Iran, under the boots of Russian and English troops during World War II, was occupied and ruined, accused of being a nest for German spies. They destroyed the country's army, toppled Reza Shah from the throne, forcing him to exile, and made his son Mohammad Reza the king of Iran. The occupying forces took all national resources into their hands, letting thousands of Iranians starve to death. The year 1953 is a year indelibly imprinted on the mind of the edifice. That year, Dr. Mohammad Mossadegh, the Prime Minister at the time, nationalised the oil industry, a success that enraged the United Kingdom and the United States of America. On the 19th of August 1953, in an Anglo-American coup, the Prime Minister was removed from power and many Iranian nationalists arrested. The edifice bore witness to the demise of a nation's hope. Mohammad Reza Shah, who had fled the country, returned a few days after the coup.
اگر اون نهضت به شکست منجر نمی‌شد، عملاً ملت ایران در
It's quite natural that hadn't that movement failed, the Iranian nation would have continued its journey toward its historical perfection in a natural fashion and experienced its local balanced development. But the meddling in the national movement by imperial powers, that is the US and the UK, interrupted the current of balance, intrinsic development in Iranian society.
After the 1953 coup d'etat, the nation's pent-up anger came to the surface every now and then, while the regime searched desperately for ways to curb the situation. In the mid-1950s, a new organization was established with the help of the CIA and the Mossad. SAVAK, or the Organization of Intelligence and National Security, aimed to counteract any security threat to the country. Dr. Javad Mansouri was a political prisoner before the 1979 revolution in different prisons across the country.
بعد از کودتای 28 مرداد 1332
After the 1953 coup d'etat, they decided to have a powerful organization to suppress the Iranian anti-imperialist movement, especially since the movement had continued for a long time and the regime was impotent.
ضعف رژیم شاه به این نتیجه رسیدن که
So in 1956, the bill was officially put forward and approved in Parliament, and with a design by the CIA, this organization was established. The CIA had even an office in Savak, and all plans, information exchanges, training, equipment were from the CIA.
کل برنامه‌ها مبادله اطلاعات آموزش تجهیزات با CIA بود.
Nipping any protest in the bud, Savak planned to round up all political dissidents in the country. A need for more prisons was urgent now. New prisons were built around the Markov prison. One of them was for political prisoners, where a large number of political opponents of different trends spent years of their lives.
دقیقاً بعد از کودتای 28 مرداد 1332 است که
Right after the 1953 coup d'etat, again due to the increase in the number of political prisoners and their inherent difference from criminals, in the early 1950s, a separate building was officially built as the political prison.
Of those prisoners, some work as docents at the Garden Museum, telling visitors their stories of the hardship they experienced there. Mr. Hossein Khan Ali is one of them. As a political dissident during the 1960s, he spent 5 years in the Shah's prisons.
There was a man in this prison for 30 years, Safar Khan Qahramanian. This man was for a long time in this room. For 16 years since he was arrested, no one was allowed to visit him. After 16 years, he was called up to the meeting room. He couldn't believe it. He was called a few times and he finally went to the meeting room. When he went there, he saw a woman with a little child and a man with her. The woman called him over. As he stood in front of her in the meeting room, she said, "Father, I'm your daughter. This is my child and this is my husband." Of all his family, only that girl had been left for him. All others had passed away. And that girl came here every week for the last remaining 14 years to visit her father.
After the events of June 1963, led by Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini, Savak, an intelligence agency, turned into a secret police to crush any signs of revolt. And the Iron Fist became the signature of this fearsome organization. Habeas corpus was no longer a right for all people, and forced confessions and long detentions became Savak's repeat prescription for any political dissident.
در سال 42 بعد از قضایای 15 خرداد
In 1963, after the demonstrations of June the 5th and 6th, it was decided that suppressing the opponents had to be more vigorous and more extensive, and the opponents had to be treated more violently.
سازمان موساد به کمک ساواک آمد و موساد هم یه دفتری رو
It was here that the Mossad came to help Savak, and the Mossad also established an office in Savak and began to train, equip, and exchange information with Savak.
The 1953 coup ushered in the emergence of leftist parties. Though they couldn't play an important role in the political arena of a religious country like Iran, while the religious movement led by Ayatollah Khomeini aimed to raise public awareness, the leftist groups took arms to fight against the regime. Mr. Davud As-Sadi Khamenei was a founding member of the Islamic Society of Students in Stockholm. In 1977, soon after his return to Iran, As-Sadi was arrested for political activities inside the country. After a six-month interrogation, he was transferred to the Qasr prison. For him, there were two main ideologies in the prison.
In those days, there were two points of view for the struggle. Some held that the struggle must be a cultural struggle. From a cultural perspective, the society must reach a level so as not to accept a person as Shah. But there were some people that believed in the armed struggle. They aimed to announce their stance by killing the people near the Shah. And among those two groups, there were some people that believed in a combination of a cultural and an armed struggle. Anyway, this issue that the movement must be purely cultural was one of the views at the time which was preferred by many figures, that is, those who were intellectual.
In 1972, as the armed struggle against the Pahlavi regime gathered momentum, the Joint Counter-Sabotage Committee was founded, aiming to establish close liaison between different security agencies and armed forces to confront the opponents. At the same time, a new prison was given to the committee. Many prisoners were killed in this prison under the brutal torture of Savak agents. Dr. Mansouri was in prison both before and after 1971. During his second imprisonment in the Joint Counter-Sabotage Committee prison, he suffered harsh interrogation and harrowing tortures.
از سال 50 رژیم شاه برخوردش با زندانیان سیاسی بسیار خشن خصمانه.
From the year 1971, the Pahlavi regime treated political prisoners very brutally and revengefully. Before that, they would treat a political prisoner like a bankrupt, in a very ordinary way. But from 1971 on, they were facing people they considered as their sworn enemies who intended to overthrow the regime. The treatment was so brutal that they thought no one would dare go this way, or that prisoners would never resume their activities after being released.
After the year 1971, the regime had initiated a shake-up in the way they treated political dissidents. Almost all of those arrested for political reasons underwent long, excruciating interrogations.
یک روز عصری حالا گویا بازجوها بیکار بودن.
One afternoon, it seemed that the interrogators had nothing to do and were bored. They called me and another young man who had come from abroad and I didn't know him. They put us in front of each other, forcing us to beat each other, but we didn't. They told him to beat me. He refused and therefore they gave him a beating. Then they left him alone and told me to beat him. I also refused, and then they gave me a beating. They beat me very hard. Then another interrogator arrived and said, I know this guy. He is not an important person. Take him to the cell and release him tomorrow. They grabbed my arms and dragged me back into the cell. One week passed by, but no one came to release me. After 1 week, they called me and took me directly to the torture room. Usually they would take us to the interrogation room and then to the torture room. They took me directly to the torture room. They aimed to break one's concentration so that one couldn't speak about anything in a measured way.
After endless sessions of interrogation and trials that could take several months, they would be sent to one of the political prisons, including the Qasr prison.
تمام طول مدتی که زندانی در کمیته بود اصلا خانواده از این اطلاع نداشتن تا
During the time the prisoner was in the committee, his family would never know of him at all. One could be there for a year or more or less. Whenever their families would go, for example, to Evin Penitentiary, they couldn't find their children. That's while some families knew their children were there.
It was clear that the Shah had given the green light to Savvak brutality. In hindsight, Savvak harassment merely fanned the flames of the revolution. Mr. Davud Yazdani, a former political prisoner, was a soldier during the revolution. He was arrested for his political activities inside the garrison and spent a long time incarcerated in the gas prison. Now he's working as a guide at the Garden Museum.
Savak's harassment and torture accelerated the downfall of the Shah, and the Iranian people became stronger and stronger and continued the struggle to overthrow the decadent regime.
With draconian power, Savak set a reign of terror that lasted 2 years. Many were arrested, tortured, or even killed on the slightest charges. This era was one of the darkest chapters in the history of modern Iran.
در سال 55 رژیم شاه تصمیم داشت.
In 1976, the regime had decided to put in prison whoever showed the least opposition, thinking that in this way it could reduce the numbers of its opponents. Therefore, the prisons of the Shah became overcrowded, that is, political prisons. At that time, the Castra prison and others were overcrowded.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters, I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we will be with you with the explanation of Dua ul-Kumail, the commentary of different parts of this Kumail supplication by the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salam. We'll be back after you listen to the parts we're going to discuss.
Ya Rabbi, Ya Rabbi, Ya Rab, As'aluka bihaqqika wa qudsika wa azami sifatika wa asma'ik. أن تجعل أوقاتي من الليل والنهار بذكرك معمورا وبخدمتك موصولا وأعمالي عندك مقبولا حتى تكون أعمالي وأورادي كلها وردا واحدا وحالي في خدمتك سرمدا.
Brothers and sisters, as you were previously with us, we were discussing this excerpt of the Divine Kumail supplication. Ya Rabbi, Ya Rabbi, Ya Rab. My Lord, my Lord, أسألك بحقك وقدسك وأعظم صفاتك وأسمائك. I ask you by your truth, your holiness, and greatness of your attributes and names. أن تجعل أوقاتي من الليل والنهار بذكرك معمورة. That you make my times in the night and the day inhabited by your remembrance. وبخدمتك موصولة. And join to your service. وأعمالي عندك مقبولة. And make my acts acceptable to you. حتى تكون أعمالي وأورادي كلها وردا واحدة. وحالي في خدمتك سرمدا. So that my acts and my prayers may all be a single litany and my occupation with your service everlasting. In this regard, we sufficiently discussed this phrase where Imam alayhi salam says, وَأَعْمَالِي عِندَكَ مَقْبُولَةً. We mentioned some of the conditions of the acceptance of our deeds as the servants, and the most important of which was sincerity in our actions, specifically sincerity in the love of the Almighty Allah. Now, the question we were addressing was from where should we draw this love of the Almighty Allah? We were explaining the fact that Almighty Allah confers upon His servants His love and affection, and that's why we see different instances and frequent indications to this concept in the Islamic narrations and supplications. For example, in the supplication of Imam Hussein alayhi salam on the day of Arafah, we see Imam Hussein alayhi salam supplicating to Allah with these verses. He says, O Allah, you are the one who has caused the rays of light to shine on the hearts of your friends such that they recognized you. They attested to your oneness. You are the one who has removed the love of others from the hearts of your lovers such that they loved none but you and did not take resort to other than you. You are their companion when they are left lonely in the world. You are the one who has guided them after they have been distanced from the signs and proofs. What has he found who has lost you? And what has he lost who has found you? Indeed, he who is pleased with other than you as a substitute has gone wrong, and verily, one who has sought after than you in exchange is in loss. How can one aspire for other than you whilst you have not stopped your benevolence? How can one ask from other than you while you have not changed your way of generosity? O he who has made his lovers taste the sweetness of intimacy such that they stood before him in praise. O Allah, seek me by your mercy until I reach you and attract me by your favor so that I may turn toward you.
Oh my Lord, oh Lord, oh Lord, I beseech you by your glory and honor, by your supremely high attributes and by your names, to cause me to utilize my time day and night in your remembrance by engaging myself in serving you, and to let my deeds be acceptable to you, so much so that all my actions and offerings may be transformed into one continuous and sustained effort, and my life may take the form of constant and perpetual service to you. O my Master, O you upon whom I rely, O you unto whom I express my distress.
Thank you, Allah, now that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing
not a dream. This is so true. Feeling the peace all around. Seeing things we could never imagine. Hearing the sound of rivers flow. And we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable. Knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
One of the more instances, dear listeners, that we see the Almighty Allah making us love Him is that He shows His affection towards His servants, towards us as the servants bringing Him our servitude. Allah the Exalted reveals to His servants by showering upon them His blessings so that they might love Him. Indeed, the bounties showered upon the heedful and intelligent hearts only are effective in endearing Allah to them. A comparison between what descends from Allah to His servants of His blessings, grace and benevolence and beauty and forgiveness, and that which ascends from the servants to Allah of evil and ugly deeds, give rise to a sense of shame in the servant towards his master, as he returns the love and affection from him with avoidance and hatred toward him. How miserable and wretched is a man who returns Allah's love for him and his exhibition of his love for him by avoiding him, subhanahu wa ta'ala, and turning away from him. Just have a look at these beautiful words of the supplication of Iftitah. You call me and I turn away from you. Ya Rabbi, innaka tad'uni fa'uwalli ank. You show me affection and I show hatred towards you. Wa tatahabbabu ilayya fa'atabaghadu ilayk. You display your love for me and I do not accept it. Wa tatawaddadu ilayya fala aqbalu mink. As though I am above you. Ka'anna liyattatawwula alayk. But this did not prevent you from having mercy on me. فَلَمْ يَمْنَعَكَ ذَٰلِكَ مِنَ الرَّحْمَةِ لِي وَالْإِحْسَانِ إِلَيْهِ. Being good to me and favoring me. وَالتَّفَضُّلَ عَلَيَّ بِجُودِكَ وَكَرَمِكَ. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. وَالسَّلَامُ عَلَيْكُمْ وَرَحْمَةُ اللَّهِ وَبَرَكَاتُهُ.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. We'll be right back.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.